The temperature is in the 60-degree range in the Twin Cities. It makes you think about spring, and it also makes you think about baseball season, and that's where we're going to talk about right now. As I just returned from Fort Myers, checking out the Twins to see if they're going to win 91 or 92 games, which is my prediction. This is Chin Music, the Chin Music Podcast, home services, studios. I'm here with Roy Smalley. Jim, I think, is on a James Bond-like European trip. He'll come back with his Aston Martin and his vodka martinis, shaken, not stirred, and join us next week. But right now he's not there. But we welcome Roy in. Roy, how's it going?
It's going great, Lavelle. You're right. It just feels like spring training, even up here.
Yeah. And I've covered like 27 spring trainings, and right kind of at the part where I don't know if there's ever dog days of spring training, but they've been on the road for a couple weeks covering games, bouncing around Florida. Pitchers are slowly getting ramped up to start the season. You've been through a few spring trainings yourself, Roy. What is the 6 weeks like for you? Did you like spring training? If you have any favorite memories.
I love spring training. It was great. My wife in particular loved it because it was like, relative to the way the baseball season is, where you're home a week and gone a week, and the whole week that you're home, you're gone half of those days, half of the day for that week. Spring training is like more like a 8-to-5 job. In as far as my wife is concerned, it was like, okay, what time will we be home for dinner? What are we going to do with the kids? And as far as playing with them and all that. So spring training was relaxed. I mean, it was great. It was a little bit easier for me after my first two spring trainings. I mean, actually, after my first spring training, starting with the second one, I kind of had a starting job. So it's easier to have a total relaxation when you're just getting yourself ready rather than trying to make the club. But as far as the doldrums, as far as the dog days, there is some of that. I mean, regardless of how nice it is to be with your family for 6 weeks, the last 2 weeks, generally speaking, I think hitters are ready pretty quickly. And you start getting hot, week three or four, you start swinging really well, you're getting a whole bunch of hits. And then you face another 10 days or 2 weeks and you go, man, these aren't counting. We need to start. So I feel this good in the regular season, not just down here where they don't count, So there is some of that as we wait for the pitchers to get ready. There's a bit of a lull that you try real hard not to let happen as a hitter.
I've covered about 26 or 27 spring trainings, and it's my favorite time of the baseball year, to be honest with you, because you're away from home, usually anywhere from 44 to 47 days, and you're just immersed in baseball. I don't have to worry about grass being cut, a garbage being taken out, or stuff like that. I'm immersed in the game, and getting up in the morning, I got a purpose to go to the ballpark and spend a day at the ballpark, and then in the evening you go out and have a decent meal or catch a movie, or in my case, smoke a cigar and wash, rinse, repeat the next day, which I have no problems doing. I just always like the vibe because everything's just so baseball intensive. Everybody's in a good mood. Even players you've had difficulties with during the regular season are in a good mood because the wins and losses haven't started to pile up yet. And in terms of access, it's the best time of year just to engage with players and get good stories and humanize some people and speculate what's going to happen during the season. So there's nothing like being in Florida for 45 days on a company expense account. That's how I'm going to wrap up my views on spring training. that's the beautiful thing about that. So, well, let's talk a little bit about the team here. Roy, I wrote a column a couple of days ago, my final column from Florida, touting this offense that it's going to score over 800 runs. I think it's going to head toward 850. There's a lot of great things going on with this team. Buxton is in the greatest mood I've ever seen him in. We had a great conversation on Monday. Correa is trying to bounce back from the plantar fasciitis that dogged him last season. You got guys with experience like Royce Lewis and Matt Wallner, Edouard Julien. And you've got You got Max Kepler, who had the second half of his life. I'm just looking at this, Roy, and I'm seeing a lot of run score from this team. Think about what they did in the second half of last year. They ended up finishing 10th in run score. That's after, I believe, being like 19th at the All-Star break. So what do you see as the potential of the Twins' offensive attack this year?
Well, you'd kind of you mentioned all the key components, you know, for sure. Before I kind of add on to that, you tell me. You've been down there. It's hard for me to follow spring training closely enough to know who's playing and how often and where they're playing and how they're swinging it. You know, you see, you know, the results of games, the scores are. I mean, they're not running 10 runs a game out there yet. So, and I understand about that they're playing a lot of different guys and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But I'd like to know, before I talk about what the keys are, I'd like to know if you're seeing anything. Well, I'll just tell you what the keys are. Obviously, you mentioned Buxton. He's going to be 70% of it. The other 20% of it's going to be Correa, and the rest of it's going to be Wallner and Royce Lewis and Julian, you know, potentially Kirilloff. I mean, so and Kepler. I mean, that's, you know, all the support guys. So tell me how the studs are looking at the plate, because I can't tell.
Okay, everybody has shown flashes. Lewis already has a grand slam in spring training.
Well, that's all he does.
Yeah, I know. And there was a game last week, Roy, where Buxton homered in his first at bat, tripled in his second at bat, and tripled in his third at bat. Now, the triples were kind of wind-aided a little bit. One of the balls should have been caught, I thought. But on the third triple, Buxton may not have been running more than 75% of his capability and still coasted in the third base standing up. And I'm sitting there going, this is just like old times with Buck, you know? So he looks good. I'm curious to get your thoughts on where the Twins should bet Carlos Santana. He's 37. He's going to be able to hit lefties. That because of his superior glove work, he's probably going to play first base more than Kirilloff. But he does have the ability to draw a walk. That's something that's held true with him throughout his career. I'm thinking someone like Santana could slide in right in the number two hole behind Julian. It's always dangerous trying to predict lineups because a manager damn near has like 160 lineups, different lineups a game, a year now, over 162 games. But to me, Carlos Santana should be a guy who should be batting near the top of the order or maybe setting the table for some guys to drive him in. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a funny kind of term, setting the table when a guy's 37 and can't run, right?
But I know.
but I agree with you. So without that preamble, if you had just asked me where should he hit, I would have said second or fourth. And what I think, just because you have to place guys in the lineup to get the most out of what they do the best, right? And you're right, he can draw a walk with the best of them. And when he's not, you know, when he doesn't draw a walk, he's got a chance to drive in a run or, you know, hit a double or something from the second spot. The Twins aren't a big running team anyway. So, I mean, it's not a question of clogging up the base paths. I think it's just a question of getting guys on, right? So that's one thought. The other thought that I have is against left-handed pitching, the fourth spot could be pretty good for the same, you know, for the same reasons that coming up, got men on base, maybe drives them in, maybe gets a walk. And now the fifth place hitter, which I have maintained for 5 years, is, or maybe more than that, 6 years, ever since Nelson Cruz was here, I've thought that the fifth place hitter was the most, you know, maybe one of the most important spots in the lineup for the Twins, because you need to protect numbers three and four, and you need to be able to pick them up if they fail. They're not going to drive in every run they see. They come up with men on base. If they drive them in, great. The fifth hitter can keep the line going. If they don't drive them in, you look to the fifth hitter to get some kind of something, a run or two out of this rally that they had going with, you know, before the inning ends. And you saw, that's why Rocco hit Luis Arraez fifth a lot. And the reason was because you look at, say, the first, there's one out, you know, the first two guys, there's nobody out, first two guys get on, third guy makes an out, fourth guy makes an out, and now your home run guys are done, and the manager's saying, God, I got to get one run out of this thing. You know, I mean, and so, you know, he'd send Luis Arraez in the fifth hole and, you know, got an awful lot of one run RBIs at, you know, in an inning at that with that. And I think that's going to be the case when Rocco puts his lineup together this year, depending on the left-hander or right-handed starter. I think he's going to load right-handers up. I think Santana is going to be a part of that mix. And I think him hitting, in the fourth spot, either the second or the fourth spot, if they've got somebody that they like hitting fifth, then I think those two would be the spots.
Yeah, it's actually helps Rocco to have someone who can be flexible in that lineup like Santana, because he can be fired out against lefties for sure. He can use them to help break up the right-handed hitters in the lineup. Because I'm curious to see where Rocco bats Buxton, Correa, and Lewis when they're all swinging good. He may have to bunch those guys up, but he may not care, especially against a lefty. The next person I wanted to talk about, Edouard Julien, the sweet swinging second baseman. I had a conversation with Rocco late last week. Actually, the Twins were in Bradenton, so it was last Friday. Bradenton, by the way, worst spring training facility ever.
Ever.
Good. I'm glad you agree. There's no room for the media in the press box anymore because they got all their bells and whistles people sitting in there. They don't let you sit in the press box of the right after the game. So I'm just like, from working conditions, horrible. McKechnie Field, that press box used to sway when the wind was blowing too. So not a fan of that place. Anyway, we're talking about the offense, and I mentioned Julien. I said, I'm sure you want him to take the next step. You probably want him to hit, you know, lefties better, blah, blah, blah. And Rocco's like, nope. I just want him to continue to take good at-bats. I just want him to take walks when he can get them and drive pitches that he can drive. If I need to bring someone off the bench to face a lefty, I can do that. And I got what he said. I was still bummed out about it a little bit because I think you have to face lefties and learn how to hit lefties. So I don't know how many opportunities Julien's going to get to show that he can – that he's learned to hit lefties better. What do you think about that?
I think that's absolutely right. And I've been thinking about that for Walner as well. I've been thinking about that for a few weeks now. You know, just a quick aside for Walner, it's like you got to play him or you got to right now make a decision. Is he a platoon guy? The reason being is if you want him to develop into your everyday left fielder or right fielder, probably left fielder, he's just got to learn it. You know, I mean, if you're thinking that he's never really going to hit left-handers, then you've made that decision about him because he's not going to hit left-handers at some point in time, hitting only right-handers for him. You know, he hits only right-handers for a month, and then you go, okay, now you're swinging the bat. Great, let's see if I can do it against left-handers. That could screw everything up because he just hadn't seen them. So I think there's a little bit of that with Julien, but I think Julien will be given a little bit more rope in terms of that. You know, late-inning deal, when you got to have your best possible matchup. Okay, maybe you go to a right-handed hitter, but I think he's going to be given just a little bit more leeway here in terms of trying to figure out how to hit him. When you look at his bat, at his style, at his approach, the way he can hit the ball to the opposite field, well, it would seem to me that he could learn to hit lefties pretty well just with experience, against them, because he's willing to let the ball travel, and you don't see him, you know, way out in front of breaking balls a lot. I mean, and even with two strikes, even though he strikes out a lot, he has the ability to have good two strike at bats and hit the ball the other way and all the things you have to do to be a good two strike hitter. I think he has that approach already in him. So I think I think it would be worth, I mean, if he's going to be your everyday second baseman, if that's the way it's going to be, then I think you got to give him you have to give him a shot. Unless there's certain times a manager will say, I got to have this run. I mean, I'd love to have him continue to learn up there, but I got to have this run. And I feel more comfortable with this right-hand hitter against the left-hander. There will be some of that, but like I say, I think they'll give him more chance. Well, one other thing I want to say about Julian, I don't know if I've talked about this before, but he strikes out a lot, for different reasons than everybody else who strikes out a lot. Yep. He strikes out a lot because he takes so many pitches and he takes them with purpose. It's not like he takes them because he's beat or fooled. He's got a great eye. He'll get strikes. He'll get balls called strike. He knows it's a ball. He takes that. Now all of a sudden it's strike two when it shouldn't be. There's a lot of that. He also will not early in counts. He'll not swing at nasty pitches. You know, a hard slider on the outside corner, a cut fastball, something like that. Not what he's looking for. He won't swing at it. He's willing to go. He's willing to go to two strikes. Anybody that's willing to go to two strikes in order to get the pitch that you want to hit during the early parts of the at bat, you're going to strike out more than many people. But I think, and I see in him the ability to continue that approach. And when he gets to two strikes, then have, especially against left-handers, then have a way, or even against right-handers, have a way to go through the middle of the field or the opposite field so that it's not fooled and he continues to have a good at bat.
Tweet. Before I offer my two cents on Julian and Wallner, here is a word from our sponsors today.
Scott for Aquarius, wishing you a happy new year. The new year often means a fresh start. How about your furnace? Does it need a fresh start? It's been working hard, and we all know there's a lot of winter left to go. With your safety and comfort as our top priority, Aquarius Home Services is offering $98 off any furnace repair. Be worry-free with your furnace. We're here to help, and just a click away at AquariusHomeServices.com. Aquarius, earning the right to be recommended.
Got the winter blues? Start planning your summer. Plan on fun and get out in the water with your boat club. Your boat club offers boat club memberships and daily rentals with access to over 40 bodies of water and over 400 brand new boats to enjoy. Whether you want to cruise on a pontoon, create waves in a speedboat, or reel in a big one on a fishing boat, your boat club has got you covered. Unlimited boating memberships are available now, starting at just $1.99 a month after a one-time initiation. Life is better on the water. Find out more today at yourboatclub.com.
Okay, yeah, I'm on your side, Roy, with a lot of that. And you hit the nail right on the head about Julian. He gets, I don't want to say gets in trouble, but he's comfortable taking strikes. He takes strikes with conviction, which I would give him credit for. And when he does strike out a lot, it's because he's looking at it as a close pitch. And during your career, have you seen players get reputation calls the more they get experience or the more they prove they know what a strike zone is?
Well, there's no question. There's no question that happens. And it happened with me a little bit. I mean, I wasn't a Joe Mauer or Don Mattingly type hitter, Wade Boggs. I wasn't in that class. Wade Boggs, I stand out there at shortstop and watch pitches, and guys just didn't call an awful lot of strikes on Wade Boggs. He had that. You know, speaking of another guy, didn't mind going to two strikes. he got most close pitches went his way, especially in Fenway. There's no way that he, I don't know, I'd be shocked if he ever got to call strike three in Fenway ever. But Mattingly was that way after you prove that you know the strike zone. And I was a little bit that way. Mock gave me a great piece of advice one time because I drew a lot of walks, and I know where I speak because about the walks and knowing the strike zone and the strikeouts, because I was the same way. I mean, if I was looking for a certain pitch and I got something else, I took it, and I would take pitches on out the outside corner. Cause that's, I mean, why make an out? I might get a better pitch to hit with two strikes, I would do that, but I had a really good knowledge of the strike zone and I walked a lot. And so Mock told me one time, he said, look, don't ever, he said, it's getting around the league. The umpires know that you know the strike zone. Don't ever ask them where a pitch was. When you take a, you know, if you swing and miss a pitch, you know, you always see guys turn around and say, you know, was that high or was that outside, whatever it was. The umpire goes, you know, yes, or whatever it was. And he said, don't ever do that. He said, because you need to tell the umpires where the pitch is. You see it better than the umpires do. You got a way better knowledge of strike zone than any of the umpires. So why would you give them the ability? You can't tell them one time, damn it, that ball was outside. And it, when 2 days earlier, or the last time this guy's behind the plate for you, you swung the ball and said, was that ball outside? You know, I mean, you can't have you lose your credibility. You've got a lot of credibility going for you. So just tell them, you know. So, and I started doing that. I wouldn't turn around. I wouldn't argue, but I would just say down into the dirt, you know, for the umpire to hear, you know, come on, that ball's outside. That ball's 3 inches outside. You know, you can't call that pitch, you know, that kind of stuff. And it really did help. I mean, I never, ever ask an umpire, never let him think that I didn't know exactly where the pitch was. And I actually went up to Joe Mauer about 5, 7, 8 years ago. I don't know. And because Joe used to do that. He would, you know, somebody call a bad pitch on him and he politely turn his head to him and say, you know, I think that ball's outside. You know, are you sure about that? And, you know, all the kind of Joe kind of way. And then periodically he'd swing and miss a pitch and turn around and say, was that a strike? You know, did I swing in a bad pitch or was that a strike? And the umpire would, you know, whatever he said. And I told Joe one time, I said, let me tell you a story about what Mock told me. And you're, you know, 10 times a hitter I was. So you have established that you know better than shit. You know better than the center field camera, for God's sakes. You know, but you know the strike zone better than. Don't ever say that to umpire. I'm just giving you some humble advice. You got to own the umpires. You tell them, nope, you're wrong. Ball's outside. Let's get it right from now on. You know, and never ask them, you know, because it ruins your credibility a little bit. And he listened to me politely. He nodded his head, said, yeah. But it didn't change anything. And Joe was going to be Joe. And, you know, he's in the Hall of Fame. So who am I to tell stories on him?
Yeah, I remember when Boggs was with the Rays, since you brought up Wade Boggs, and LaTroy was on the mound, and LaTroy threw a pitch right down the middle of the plate. It cut the plate in half, vertically and horizontally. Horizontally, all right. Umpire said ball. And yeah, all of us were just amazed. And that's Wade Boggs, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm guessing once Julian proves these umpires that he knows what the hell the strike zone is, he may be able to have a few of those calls go his way. That's where I'm headed with that.
He'll get a few if he works it well, you know, with the umpires and stuff. And the other thing you can't do is show the umpire up. If you just tell him, you know, that if you just prove to him that you know that in your mind you are so sure about the pitch, then and never really make an awful stink about a really close pitch, you know, then you can kind of work the umpires. It's a little different now because they go back and, you know, they'll go back and look at the tape. If a guy argues real hard or something, then the umpire, he'll argue back, but then he'll go look at it and he'll see if he was right or wrong. And that's why now more than ever, you have to be absolutely sure. You need to be right way more now than I had to be right, because they're looking at the tape. But I think he'll get better and better. I think they worked him over a little bit as a rookie player, and I think as he goes along, especially as he starts, and you know, success hitting the ball breeds success taking pitches, right? I mean, the umpires, the better hitter you are, the more leeway you get as an umpire. So I think all those things are going to happen.
Of course, we talk about all this, and then 2 years from now, when they have the automatic strike zone, it's not going to matter.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to tell you that I've played with you guys over the years that they'd argue with the automatic strike. They'd get thrown out of the game arguing with the automatic strike zone. So we'll see what happens.
And I talked to Buck when he was over at St. Paul late in the season when he was making that bid to be on the postseason roster, and he said the automatic strike zone, it was 2 or 3 pitches he that were called strikes on him that he thought there was no chance they crossed the plate. So he's a little skeptical of the whole thing. And Ryan Jeffers Jeffers hates it too, because he has spent, you know, years of his life trying to learn how to pitch frame, you know, and now that's going to be taken away from him because of the strike zone.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that pitch framing is overrated. I really do. And I always say that because of the way the catchers do it, you know, taking a ball that's 6 inches outside the zone and ripping it up in the, and showing it in the middle of the plate. You know, I mean, I got to think that that's the umpires looking at him going, really? You're trying to, you know, framing pitches has always been a good thing to do. If you could catch the ball, if it was close, but just off, and you could catch the ball in such a way that it was a real natural, easy receiving of the ball. But this, you know, catching it and ripping it back into the zone, I think that's much ado about nothing. And I think the automatic strike zone is going to be way better for the fans, way better for the length of games, and ultimately way better for the caliber of the game, because nobody's going to be able to get away. Pitchers aren't going to be able to get away with, you know, a really bad call, getting them back into a count where they can throw a nasty strike three. Hitters are not going to be able to just be cheating to the pull field where their head kind of loses the outside part of the plate. And it's clearly a strike, but they think it's outside because they've left the plate a little bit, you know, trying to pull. I mean, everybody's going to have to get way more honest. It's going to change the way guys hit and the way guys pitch. And I think it's going to change it for the better.
I totally agree. Hey, one last thing before we end today's episode. I want to get your thoughts on the pitching staff. They didn't really replace Sonny Gray adequately. Of course, that's my opinion. And Gray is now in St. Louis, where he pulled a hamstring, I believe, in his second outing, and now he's doubtful for opening day. But what are your thoughts about the strength of the starting rotation? It looks like Varland's probably going to be the fifth starter because DeScalfani is still coming back from a tender elbow area, so he will not be ramped up in time for opening day, which the Twins aren't too worried about. Because they've got off days in April that they can go with a four men for a while before they actually need a fifth guy. But what are your thoughts on the rotation? You got a legitimate ace in Pablo Lopez. We need both of Joe Ryan and Bailey Ober to take a step forward. And I think Chris Paddock is the wild card. So what are you liking about this rotation?
I will liken the rotation to the Twins offense, where on the offensive side, you know, Buck is everything. And then from there, you know, improvement, you know, all these things. Who's the real Kepler? Royce Lewis getting better and better all the time. Correa finding it again, you know, all that other stuff. But Buck is going to be the, you know, the 800-pound gorilla one way or the other, either helpfully or not. And in the same way, I'm going to call it Joe Ryan, but it could be either Joe Ryan or Bailey Ober. One of those guys has got to really take the next step. And I'm going to say Joe Ryan. He's got the ability to do that. We've talked about his needing the secondary pitches. He's got it. You know, he's got to find those. If he were to do that, if he were to step up and be, I mean, it's very difficult to replace Sonny Gray's performance, and you understand why they're not going to pay him a lot of money at his age and all that kind of stuff, and whether or not he can continue to, you know, be that dominant at his age and for the money you have to pay him is, you know, that's just a decision you make one way or the other. So nobody was really going to replace him unless you go with one of the big free agents, and then you're paying them a boatload of money too when you've got Ryan and Ober sitting there trying to get better and have the ability to get better. I think, like Buck in the offense, I think Joe Ryan is the key. If he is really the pitcher that we saw the second half of the season, Twins got a major issue. If he is the pitcher that they've seen most of the other seasons and the first half of last year, then all of a sudden the rotation, just like it was with Sonny Gray and Pablo Lopez, have a good top two. Now Bailey Ober can get better. And Paddock, who I think has maybe as good a stuff as anybody in the rotation, we'll see how he comes back. He's a wild card. It could be, you know, they could jump that could jump up in the rotation pretty easily. So, but I'm still going back to Joe. I think he's the linchpin of the rotation now, and the rotation is going to go as he goes.
I agree. I like that assessment there. If he can definitely take a step forward, that's going to be huge for this rotation. A lot of people are going to be looking at the rotation since the Twins scaled back the payroll a little bit and they didn't even make a competitive offer to keep Gray. They have to put up with that whole cheap Polats thing once again. But they have pitchers in-house who can do the job. The question is, to me, how the next, like, pitcher number 6th, 7th, or 8th in the pecking order pitches when they're called on to give them some innings, because someone's going to get banged up and someone may struggle for a while and need some work. So I hope to have enough depth behind the top five for them.
I'll give you a really quick assessment of the way I'm looking at it. My biggest concern is not the pitching staff, it's the offense. And it's not because I don't think that you're wrong that they could score, you know, 8 runs a game. I think they could. But I think this pitching staff that they've assembled, the starting staff that they assembled, is good enough if the guys swing it the way they're capable of swinging it and do it with some consistency. My concern is that the pitching staff's not good enough for them to struggle a little bit and score 2 or 3 runs a game. It's not good enough for that. They're going to have to hit. And this is an offense that's going to be really good at times and really streaky. I mean, Buck's going to go through it. Kepler's going to go through it. Probably Royce Lewis will go through it, where they can't buy a hit for a while. And all of a sudden, the offense doesn't look good. They're not scoring a lot of runs. And I don't think it's fair to go to the pitching staff at this point with what they put together and say, hey, you got to hold everybody to 2 runs. You know, I mean, the Twins offense is going to have to hit. If they do, starting staff is good enough to get to that bullpen, which is going to be dominant. I'm putting it on the offense.
Yep, I can see that. And plus, you know, the other thing too, if they hit, they'll give the starting rotation a little more leeway on both ends. Actually, I can see the rotation being propped up 2 ways. 1, by a better offense, which I believe they will have. And 2, by a strong bullpen, which I believe they will have. So, Griffin Jacks looks great by Roy. His sweeper is nasty. It's really breaking away. He's got it under control. He's really dominating with it now.
That's great to hear, because as a reliever, you know, he's throwing 96, 97, touching 98. And then if he's got something else that's that quality, man, that's going to be good.
Yep. So there's a lot of positives right now, but it usually are positives in March because everybody's 0-0. But the Twins are coming off a division championship, and they do look capable of defending that title. So for Roy Smalley, for Jim Suhan, who is in parts whereabouts unknown, this is Lavelle Neal. Thanks for listening to Chin Music. We will talk to you again next week.